Hello everybody to a new episode of Blog Tales. Today I have with me Philipp Hartmannsgruber. He is a board member at the Bundesblock and he's also a private consultant for blockchain topics, I think. So Philipp, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'm Philipp. I'm 32, living in Berlin. As you said, I'm a board member at the Blockchain Bundesverband, the German Blockchain Association, with 100 companies as members. And I'm also the managing partner of my own consultancy, POH Consulting, which is just my name, Philipp Johannes Albert Hartmannsgruber. And I worked for the last 1.5 years at the German Savings Banks Association and was involved for the topics of digital money and digital assets in the Sparkassen Finanzgruppe. And I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. So we mostly start with our first question, which is, how would you explain your Web3 everyday life to your grandma?
Yeah, that's actually not an easy question because I'm explaining this not just to my grandma, but to my parents since a lot of years. And I think they still don't understand what I do on a daily basis. So especially with my different topics I'm involved with, it's even more complicated. If I would explain what I'm doing as a board member at the Bundesblock, I would say the Bundesblock is like a lobby association where we try to have good regulation, especially in Germany and in Europe, for the topics of blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies. So we write position papers, we give feedback to new laws, and that's mainly the things where I'm most involved at the Bundesblock. If you would ask me how I would explain blockchain technology to my grandma, that's probably even more difficult, but I would say it's just like a database, like every other database where you put information in it. And it is decentralized with the same information on thousands of computers worldwide. So everyone has the same data and can check that. So with that easy explanation, I think it's understandable.
So you said that you tried this already for a couple of years. When did you enter the blockchain space?
Yeah, I would say I started in 2016 and was introduced first in Bitcoin and then the underlying blockchain technology. And at that time I studied, I think I was back there in my bachelor. So I studied economics. So especially the economic topics with Bitcoin influenced me a lot, because in university we learn like the classical economic stuff, which is not really the same like the Austrian school, which is like the Bitcoin philosophy. So that was highly interesting for me. And then I wrote in 2017 my master thesis about cryptocurrencies. And that was the first time I was involved with that technology, with that cryptocurrencies, when I started investing, luckily before the ICO hype in 2017. Yeah, so around that time.
When you started in 2016 in a university, I guess there was not much of an understanding of the technology or Bitcoin or any other application by lots of professors, right? So did you try to orange pill your professors, or did they even understand why you were interested in it? Was it difficult for you to say, okay, I want to write my thesis about this topic? How did this go?
Yeah, so in 2016, when I was still in my bachelor in Nuremberg, there were no classes or whatsoever about Bitcoin or blockchain technology. So it was not in there. Now I think it's different. But back then it was no topic whatsoever. And when I then did my master's degree, I said, yeah, I want to do something with Bitcoin, maybe like as a investment tool for diversification. So that was the proposal I made to my professor where I worked back then for two. And yeah, usually you can't give the title of your master thesis. So he took that, he thought about it, and he said, yeah, okay, you can write your master thesis about cryptocurrency and if it is a means of payment in everyday transaction. So it's about cryptocurrency. It was not the topic I wanted to write about, but actually what was a much easier topic back then, because in 2017 it was not a means of payment. There were not many companies who accepted Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. The volatility was extremely high back then. There were not like companies which offer Bitcoin payments and translate that directly into euro. There were some, but not a lot. So I looked into that and from different perspectives. So back then I said there will be a digital euro from the ECB. So that was like at the end of my master thesis, because I was pretty sure that the ECB will try to implement something like that. And now we see it, that they're doing that with the digital euro, the retail CBDC. It will probably not be on the blockchain, but yeah, that was actually one of my topics I put into my master thesis. It's already like 7 years ago.
You said so many interesting topics now, and I would like to ask a bit more, because you said back then your argument, or one of your arguments, was that there's not much volatility, and therefore there was too much volatility, and therefore it couldn't be a means of payment. So lately there has not been going on a lot with the price, for example, of Bitcoin. If this would be your argument, have we been already at the point where it became a means of payment for the world?
That was one of the arguments, especially if you look, like, if a company wants to accept Bitcoin and Bitcoin not like translating into euro, then they have to work with a high volatility, so they have to hedge against that risk that the Bitcoin price could decrease like 20% in the next week. With euro it's not that much. Sure, we have inflation, but not that quickly. So that was one of the arguments. But there are a lot of more, or there were a lot of more arguments. For example, if you want to have a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin as a means of payment, you need network effects. So easy example is PayPal. In the beginning, PayPal didn't have much customers. Then they scaled and introduced a lot of retailers and e-commerce companies who accepted PayPal, and now nearly everyone accepts PayPal as a means of payment, which is not like commercial bank money or central bank money, but it's e-money what PayPal has. And with that, lots of companies who accept PayPal and lots of people who have a PayPal account, you have the network effect. And without the network effect, you can't say it's a means of payment for everyday transactions. Because even now, if I want to pay here in Berlin with Bitcoin, I have maybe like 20 stores or restaurants where I could pay with Bitcoin. So that's not a means of payment for everyday transaction. I can't go to the supermarket right now and pay with Bitcoin. So that's a big issue. I think it will be in the future, but we still need a lot of time. But there are companies like Visa and MasterCard who are going into that space, which will enable paying with Bitcoin with your credit card. But we are not there yet.
So is this one of your goals to reach that?
On my personal point of view, I think we had for a lot of years, a lot of decades, a money monopoly from the central banks with the euro. And there were not many other types of forms of money. Sure, we have the central bank money right now, just cash. Soon, maybe digital euro. We have commercial bank money from the banks. We have e-money from companies like PayPal. And then all of the rest, like Apple Pay, Google Pay, Visa, MasterCard, they are just using those different means of payments to allow transactions. Then in 2008 or 2009, Bitcoin was introduced as another form of money, which kind of broke up the monopoly. But it was not seen for a lot of years by central banks or politicians as a really competitor of the money we already had. But then when Facebook and the consortium around Libra and Diem moved into that space and wanted to establish another private form of money, they woke up and they saw, oh, now our monopoly will be broken up if we allow those companies to establish a private form of money. And they worked a lot on that. They made new regulations. They now implemented MiCA, the Markets and Crypto Assets Regulation, which highly regulates especially stable coins, so another form of money. And so there is no Libra or Diem anymore. They sold the company. But we still have Bitcoin as another means of payment, which is not that easy to break up because it's a decentralized network and a decentralized means of payment. And I think there are a lot of great use cases where you could use Bitcoin, especially for cross-border payments, if you want to send money to Africa or some other continents, especially outside of Europe, because our payment system works quite well and ES2. But for cross-border payments, it's great. It's great for big payments with small fees. You have with the Lightning Network, the second layer solution of Bitcoin, where you can pay instantly for free with Bitcoin. So I think it's a really great means of payment. And I would like to see more stores and companies to accept Bitcoin.
Has this been what hooked you back then? So for me, when I first read the white paper of Bitcoin and I thought about it and so on, the thing that still fascinates me about blockchain is the decentralization and that there's not one entity or authority that can change just everything. Yeah. So what's this hook, was it for you that it might be a good means of payment in the future, or was it something else? Or what is it today also?
Yeah, so sure, that is one part, a decentralized nature, especially because you don't have like a honeypot where you can easily hack one entity to get a lot of information. We saw that a lot in the past with banks or other payment providers where they were hacked and they kept all of the records and all of the information was stolen. With Bitcoin, it's not that easy because it's a decentralized network. The transactions are already on the blockchain. They're not really public, but not really completely private or anonymous because it's pseudonymous. So you have the public key and the transactions, but you can't, if you don't know who is the owner of the public key, you can't put those together to me, for example. You can't say, oh, here, Philip sent 0.5 Bitcoin to Andreas. You can't see that. You just see the number.
Unless I know one of your key, like one of your public keys.
Yes, unless then
I can trace,
yes,
trace it.
That's true. That's true. And there are a lot of companies who can easily at least try to put my name together with the public key. But that's from my point of view, pretty good, because one of the earliest things which was said about Bitcoin that is anonymous and that like just criminals use Bitcoin. Now, if you are a criminal and you use Bitcoin, you would be pretty stupid, because then the law enforcement would easily know what you did, to whom did you send money in an illegal transaction. So no one uses Bitcoin for illegal activities. But the other thing to answer your question is not just because of the decentralized system, but because of the maximum amount of Bitcoin there will be, the near 21 million Bitcoin, which will be in circulation like 2140. That's like a complete different approach than our fiat system. So fiat, euro, US dollar, etc. Because the ECB or the Fed, they could print as much money as they want. So we see the skyrocketing inflation, which is partly because of the money printing. With Bitcoin, you can't do that. You always know when there will be how much Bitcoin circulation. And with the maximum supply, we don't have the traditional inflation. Sure, we have it now because every 10 minutes there will be new Bitcoin. But as a whole system, it is like more deflationary, because we have that maximum amount. If we have more people who want to buy Bitcoin and lesser Bitcoin, which will be circulated, you potentially see an upward trend in the Bitcoin price, which we saw over the last year since the beginning. And I think that is a really interesting approach that is completely contrary to our current monetary system.
Actually, now I have three questions. So first, did you also fall for this false trend to think in the beginning that Bitcoin is anonymous?
No. I always knew that it's pseudonymous, because you have the private key and the public key. And if you connect the public key to a person, then you have all of the information. You can make it more difficult if you do a transaction every time with another public key, but still it is traceable for companies at least.
I think you will just understand this once you understood public and private key cryptography. But I don't know everyone's going down that rabbit hole, at least not in the beginning. And leading directly to my second point, I don't think every criminal did this, even though they should probably. And I think there's still criminals out there using Bitcoin, but it's much less than criminals using fiat money. That's something we still need to keep in mind, because all the other criminals are using euros, dollars, and whatever.
Definitely. Sure. The thing is, I just spoke to Chainalysis, which is a huge company in tracking cryptocurrency transactions, and they work with the law enforcement together. And they say around 0.25% of all cryptocurrency transactions are related to criminal activities, which is like nothing. If you look at euro or cash, it's much higher. And so I think that's a narrative which was, especially in the beginning, a huge topic, which is proven to be wrong. And there are a lot of narratives which are wrong, in my point of view. One thing is the energy consumption or the energy problem with Bitcoin mining. And so there are a lot of mistakes and a lot of false publications about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And so the thing is, you asked me earlier if I orange pilled my professors, and I did not, because when I was introduced in 2016 into Bitcoin, I needed a lot of time to go into that rabbit hole. And I'm still in the rabbit hole after so many years, because every week I learn something new about Bitcoin, about cryptocurrencies, about blockchain technology. So it took me hundreds, thousands of hours to get into that space. And I'm still learning. So 2016, 2017, 2018, when I was studying, I wasn't that deep into the technology and the whole Bitcoin system as I am now. So it's not that easy to orange pill someone else if you're not completely down into the rabbit hole.
True. And I totally agree that it takes time, and it takes a lot of time to really understand it. And apparently I have not met anyone who fell into the rabbit hole and then climbed out of it again. So people stay in there because there's always something more and something new to learn. But that's also, it's amazing. And I really love that we now have more Bitcoin education or more blockchain education overall. So there's now study programs at universities, for example, Mittweida or Frankfurt. So, and also Nicosia and stuff. So it's getting started, but as you said, it takes hours, hundreds and thousands of hours. So with a study program, even if it's full time, in my point of view, you can only get started. You might get started on a very good basis, but it's still the beginning. And afterwards, you might call yourself an expert, but I think even after 10 years, you're not really the expert, because in this 10 years, so much new stuff has been developed.
Yeah.
And you will still be behind. You will always be behind. And as harsh as this might sound, it's also kind of the beauty of this, because you will never be on top of it. You will never get bored.
Yeah.
There's always development. We will just not enter a state where it's like, okay, now we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think that is a topic where you can learn every day and get information every day. For example, with Bitcoin in the beginning was totally different than it is now. There were some major changes. I think one of the most changes was, which is not really a change, it's more like a new technology built on Bitcoin. It's a second layer solution, Lightning, which was introduced, I think, 3 years ago. Where you can have transactions on the side, so not on a Bitcoin blockchain, and do, for example, between us two, thousands of transactions, nearly for free, instantaneously. And at the end, we say after 1 month, after 1 year, after 1,000 transactions, we make a sum. We see, oh, I owe you 0.1 Bitcoin. At the end of those 1,000 transactions, we put that transaction onto the Bitcoin blockchain and settle it there, and it's done. So that was, from my point of view, especially regarding the early point we talked about, Bitcoin as a means of payment, a great evolution on the Bitcoin system to have such a technology to do instantaneously nearly for free transactions worldwide. Which was not there at the beginning. So you have to learn not just about Bitcoin, then you have to learn about the Lightning Network. And you can build so much more stuff on the Bitcoin blockchain. You could do smart contracts there. You could put NFTs on the Bitcoin blockchain, which I don't want to go into detail because I'm not a fan of the traditional NFTs we saw over the last 1 or 2 years, where you just have a picture on the internet and pay one Ether or something like that. But there is every day something new or more stuff you could go into, because Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies or blockchain, it has so many facets. It has like the IT aspect, the regulatory aspect now, the doing transactions, the system which it is all built on. So there's a lot to learn, and I think everyone who is involved there learns any month anything new.
But now I have to ask, right? If you say you're not into, or you're not a fan of the traditional picture NFTs, are there at all NFTs that you can envision that you would like?
Sure. NFT is not a bad thing. As it is like, just if you have a picture, you put it on the blockchain and you sell that, and then the picture is lying on some URL on the internet, and you get kind of that URL, and the blockchain says, yeah, you're the owner of that picture. You can't do a lot with that. For example, if you put the Mona Lisa, you make a picture of the Mona Lisa, you put it on a blockchain, you're not the owner of the Mona Lisa, you're the owner of a picture of the Mona Lisa. So what I like about NFTs, if you not just have the picture, but you have a utility, a real world utility too. For example, what Bored Ape did, Bored Ape Yacht Club, they say you buy the Bored Ape and you can have a party on a yacht. So that is like a utility in the real life, which comes together with the picture. And I think with NFTs, we will see in the future that it will be used for example, music. If you have a song, you can make an NFT out of it and you can sell with the NFT the rights on the song. So you are now the owner of that song, you bought it. And if you get money what is the name of the organization who collects the money from artists? I don't know, but...
GEMA.
Genau, sure, GEMA in Germany. You get the money from GEMA for that music you bought as an NFT. So I think if you add it with like real contracts and the real right that you are the owner now of that, I think that will be huge, huge topic in the next years.
I think they are already getting started. I know of some companies who are already trying this with their artists.
Yeah.
But even for a party, I mean, some Bored Apes went over the table for a couple of million dollars. Not a price I would pay for a party, I must admit.
That's true. But if you look on the people who bought it, that were mostly famous stars in the US, which was like, good thing to show. I bought the NFT, I'm rich, I can have that party on the yacht. And I think which will be great or is already great because I think Twitter, now X, I'm still not used to X, is that you can have your NFT as a profile picture. And if you bought an NFT and you're the only owner of that NFT, you are the only person who can have that profile picture. And I think with games, that will be a huge topic, or probably is even now. I'm not a gamer, but I think it will be even more huge in the future that you buy your skin or your avatar as an NFT, and you're the only person who can have that avatar in the game or then in the future in the metaverse. So I think that will be a huge, huge case, especially in the future, where a lot of people will pay a lot of money to have a unique look.
I'm actually not so sure because the feature, I think it's already been there for a year now. And apparently I haven't seen so many profile pictures on Twitter or Instagram. I mean, on Instagram you can also put NFTs already since a year or something. They don't call it NFT, they call it digital collectible, but still I haven't seen a lot of them. Like, there was this time frame of 2 to 4 weeks after it was like published, the feature, and then everyone put their NFTs there, and then apparently afterwards I haven't seen any anymore.
I think because the NFT hype is gone, there is not an NFT hype like I think 1.5 years ago, where everyone was talking about NFT and bought NFTs for crazy prices. We don't have that anymore. We are in a bear market, not just for NFTs, but for cryptocurrencies too, and technology as a whole, which is not a bad thing from my point of view, because every company, every bank is now building stuff on digital assets, building digital assets infrastructures, building on new products. And with the next upward cycle, we will see new use cases, new products which will be launched without all of the crazy marketing hype and pursuing of earning a lot of money really quickly.
I'm not sure here. If we actually get into the next bull market without a marketing hype, I doubt it actually. So there will be some kind of marketing hype, just not around the topics that it has been in the last bull run. I think it's not going to be NFTs again, or maybe it's going to be the metaverse, but metaverse has also already been there when the last bull run was going on. So it's going to be interesting to see what it's going to be. but I'm pretty sure that it's going to be some kind of marketing hype around anything new. And it's going to be super, super, super interesting because I'm really looking forward to see what people come up with. I mean, each bull run, each marketing hype, they come up with some cool stuff that is then overhyped and it's getting like crazy expensive. Afterwards, it's getting like crazy cheap. And then in the end, it gets to a normal kind of state of price. And just after the marketing hype and after the bull run, I think then we are starting to find out what's the real value of that thing that was created now. And I don't know what's going to be the next one, but I'm pretty sure there will be one.
Definitely there will be one. But what I was trying to say is that we are now not in that crazy marketing hype, but in a more silent state where all of the companies are building on it. And if we are going to finish that bear market, that cycle, there will be the next hype, and it will start with a lot of marketing and a lot of noise. But I'm quite happy that we are not there right now, because a lot of companies can focus without all of the disturbances. But we will see that hype again. And Metaverse, I'm a big fan of Matthew Ball, who wrote a lot of articles about the Metaverse and how he envisions the Metaverse. And we sure see some kind of small parts which will be combined in the future as the Metaverse or a Metaverse, like Decentraland, for example. But we don't have a Metaverse like Matthew Ball envisioned it. I think it will take 10 to 15 years that we have that, where a lot of people will use that, but we are not there.
Yeah, I think it will definitely take some more time. Not sure how much though, as technology mostly develops exponentially. But what I like about this like bear market time is that people can start learning, and that we can start teaching or helping other people understand who didn't have touch points before. So for example, like you said before, now there are study programs. But a study program is not done at one day, so it takes some time for the students to actually go through the program. And they have the time now. And I guess in your everyday Web3 workday, you will also have to give some references to other people when you, for example, lobby for the blockchain technology. So can you recommend some sources, some addresses to go when someone wants to get deeper into blockchain, Bitcoin, digital assets? What are you doing now?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different things everyone can look at. So personally, I'm a huge fan of conferences. So there are, especially after COVID, there are a lot of great conferences all over Germany or Europe or the world. And I think that's a great possibility to learn from experts about different topics in a structured way on keynotes or panels. I think that's really good and highly recommended. I'm at a lot of conferences too as a speaker. I think if you are in a younger age and you want to study, now there are probably some universities like Mittweida or Frankfurt which are offering digital assets or blockchain where you can study it. And I think there are, of course, a lot of people on YouTube or Twitter you can follow. Or if you want to get, especially you want to start, or you want to have already some information about digital assets and blockchain and cryptocurrencies, there are a lot of academies like the Digital Asset Academy, where you have free workshops on end of last month. I had, for example, a free workshop about the digital euro, the retail CBDC on the Digital Asset Academy. There are a lot of great experts there. I think that's a really good way to get a lot of great information from a lot of experts in different fields regarding digital assets and blockchain and other topics. I think those are great points where you can get more knowledge or deepen your knowledge you already have.
Amazing. I hope that everyone out there now has some touch points where they can get started if they are interested to start into any kind of blockchain related topic. So I think we can slowly wrap it up a bit. And then we would ask the next question, which is always the same. And I would love to hear from you what kind of topic you would actually like to know more about.
I think it would be definitely AI. I think AI is huge since a lot of years, but I think it is now even bigger with ChatGPT, which is like a lighthouse for AI, because there were like a lot of stuff over the last years which was said, yeah, that's AI, but it wasn't actually really AI. I think with ChatGPT, we now have an instrument to see the huge potential of AI. It's a really great tool to use for a lot of different topics. So sure, I use it. But as blockchain technology, AI is a huge topic too. And as I mainly focus on blockchain technology and digital assets and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, I don't have that much time to go so deep into AI right now, even if I wanted to. But here on my table, there are lying four books I wanted to read about Bitcoin and on blockchain and other stuff. So that is definitely a point, a topic I would like to go into deeper detail. And interestingly, I just saw last week that I think Netflix is giving a yearly salary of like $900,000.
Yeah, I saw it too.
AI product manager. So yeah, AI is huge, and I would like to see blockchain be as huge as AI in the future. And that is why I'm doing lobbying for that technology.
Indeed. Even though I think the product manager at Netflix who's getting $900,000 a year needs to be capable of doing more than just prompting ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think so. Probably, yeah.
Okay. So last words from your side. What can you tell us about your favorite blocktail?
So maybe I just explain how I actually got into blockchain, because we talked a bit about it a bit. And I said I went into the rabbit hole in 2016, but that's actually not 100% true, because the first time I was introduced into Bitcoin was, I think, in 2012. A friend of mine told me about Bitcoin and that he invested in Bitcoin at, I think, $1. And he got a 300% profit out of it because he sold it at $3. And that was the first time I actually heard from a friend about Bitcoin. And at that point of time, I thought, okay, cool. But I didn't go into more details about Bitcoin. So that was definitely a chance I missed, because if I would have not started in 2016, but in 2012 with investing in Bitcoin or learning about Bitcoin and going 4 years earlier into that topic, I probably would be rich by now if I wouldn't have made the same mistake, like taking the 300% profit and sold at $3. But yeah, that was actually a missed chance. But I think with 2016, I was still early. I think even now, if you're going right now into Bitcoin, into cryptocurrencies, into blockchain, into the rabbit hole, you're still early. So I'm not that sad about the missed chance.
Great. That's amazing last words, to not be sad, but to be happy to already be in here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with me, Philip. And I hope you will have a nice day, as all our listeners have too.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Block.